Welcome to Interviews About Change. This is Andrew McGregor, and this is the second installment in this series, which you can find on my blog by going to thehermitslamp.com and clicking on Tarot Blog. Today I'll be discussing tarot, change, Oedipus, and all sorts of great things with Rachel Pollack. This series has been inspired by me asking myself the question why change happens and why change doesn't happen for some people or in some kinds of situations. And you had also brought up the Oedipus myth, I think it was.
Yeah, which I've been working on, along with David Vine, who wrote the Dutch translation of the play.
I mean, Oedipus play is very interesting for diviners, because oracles are a main feature of it. And the curious thing about it that makes it so fascinating is that all the terrible things happen only because the oracle predicts them. And, of course, people in that time believed the oracles and took action in regard to them. So when the oracle says to King Laios, your son will kill you, King Laios attempts to get rid of his son. And then when the oracle later says to Oedipus, you will kill your father and marry your mother, he runs away from home to be as far from the people he believes are his parents as possible. Now, what's interesting is not the idea you can't outrun your fate, but that none of this would have happened without the oracle saying it would happen. Because if they had not said anything to Laios, he would never have harmed his son. He would never have tried to get rid of his son. So his son wouldn't be growing up in Corinth instead of his home city of Thebes. And then Oedipus would never leave town and never even actually meet his true parents if the oracle didn't say to him, well, what he would do. So it becomes this kind of circular mystery of the influence of oracles on people's behavior in an atmosphere in which people believe in oracles. And that's, you know, that's an essential quality of it, that it's, you know, an absolute basic belief that people have, that oracles are correct. And this was, you know, an important belief in ancient Greece, and it was considered one of the bases of civilization. In the play, when it seems like, when we don't know yet, or Oedipus doesn't know yet, that his father was not, in fact, the king of Corinth, when he hears his father is dead, he and his wife, Jocasta, are thrilled. They feel they've beaten the prophecies, you know. But the chorus, who represents the people, is kind of horrified. The chorus, who represents the people, is horrified, because to them, the truth of oracles is the basis of their relationship to the gods. So they feel that civilization is crumbling if, in fact, you know, an important oracle is untrue. So the fact that everybody believes in the oracles, in a sense, is the basis of their, of how they work. People act according to what they think the oracles, you know, tell them. So that brings up issues for modern diviners and tarot readers. You know, what is the effect of the reading on people, and what will be, to what extent do people believe in them, and what, how does that belief add in as part of the reading? And that's kind of one of the issues that's interesting.
Do you think that giving people really direct advice, like this relationship sucks, you should get out of it, or things along those lines, is helpful or a hindrance?
Well, it's an interesting question, you know, because a lot of times people need to know things. Now, I know that the modern approach by many people in divination is to not say anything direct, to let the person come to their own conclusions and so on, you know? But I think that if people come in and they are, you know, kind of really needing to know what's going on, and the cards can say something, then it perhaps is not proper not to tell them. So, for instance, I've had situations where someone says, you know, my husband leaves his girlfriend to come back to me. And this person needs to make a decision about her life. You know? And if the cards indicate that that's not going to happen, this can help her make a decision. But, you know, then we get into the, you know, could that possibly be an Oedipus situation? Because the cards tell her he's not going to come back, she acts in a different way, which might preclude him coming back to her. Who knows, you know?
Yeah. I think it's interesting. In Santeria, when they're doing divination, they say that the sign that comes in the reading brings a person. It's not just the situation that the person is coming to the reading from, but it's also the sign that falls actually brings and energy to the reading as well. And those two kind of come into alignment to change the course that the person is going on. So, you know, there's definitely a deliberate transformation going on there.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by the sign that falls in the reading.
So they don't use cards, they use shells, right? So
when the
shells fall, the reading is taken out because the it's almost like you flip two cards, you get two numbers, which are the two different signs and the composite sign. And when that sign, they say, comes out, when it comes into being, it actually draws a particular energy into that reading, into that space, that they consider not only affects the person receiving the reading, but also the person giving the reading and anyone else in the room, to kind of realign or to transform where the person's going from. And it reminds me of this sort of this Oedipus thing where they where the oracle brings energy into alignment, and there was also an existing situation which obviously took the person there. So I'm wondering, you know, when people come for readings, how do you try and assess how much you think you're going to influence them, or do you just kind of let them deal with it as they will?
Well, you know, I really try not to particularly influence them. But I do try to be honest with, you know, what I see in the reading, always saying at the same time that they shouldn't, you know, base their decisions and about their lives on a tarot reading. So I say, you know, we're looking at what the cards say, but I'm not going to tell you that this is, you know, the absolute truth and you should follow it necessarily. You know, it's your own decisions. You know, a friend of mine is a psychic, and you know, she says that, you know, she gives people very, very direct information, but she also says she takes no responsibility for its truth. She says, you know, I go into my psychic state, this is what comes to me, and I offer it to you. And I'm not guaranteeing its, you know, accuracy in the real world. I'm just telling you what comes to me. Which I think is kind of a radical position.
Do you see in people, do you see a difference between people who change in positive ways according to readings versus people who maybe get stuck or stuck because of the reading?
Well, you know, I'm not sure anyone ever gets stuck because of a reading.
Okay.
I think what happens is people might not get unstuck.
Fair enough.
And not because of the reading, but despite the reading. Because I think readings in general will lead people to get unstuck. I don't really think readings will lead people to get stuck. Because it seems to me there's always information in the reading and always perspectives in the reading that can help you get out of, you know, situations or change situations. But what can happen certainly is people will resist that. And they may also focus on a part of the reading that enables them to resist it. You know, something negative, something that reinforces what they believe or what they've been doing.
Yeah, something that disempowers them, stops them from taking action or even reacting against the reading and saying, well, that sucks, I'm going to go do something else.
Then there's something else that I came across this phrase. It's actually part of my favorite passage from one of my favorite passages from the book Finnegan's Wake by James Joyce, which I've been thinking about and writing a little bit about recently. And I was thinking about, you know, where divination comes in. I realize there's this place in the story Finnegan's Wake, the sort of substrate of it is the idea of eternally recurring history as acted out within individuals and their dreams. And one of the concepts of it is that there's this primordial giant in Finnegan, who also is Finnegan and began, but that he, you know, sort of dies and comes back to life, and his reawakening is the start of another cycle. And there's this passage about, you know, what the moment that leads to his awakening, which is a magical act performed by Whiskey, because it's based upon a song called Finnegan's Wake, in which some working man named Finnegan falls up his ladder when drunk and dies, and at his wake, they're having such a wild time, they splash whiskey on him, and he comes awake because he loves whiskey so much. So in Joyce's moment, the magical act is, you know, the splashing of the whiskey, but before that, there's this part in which, you know, they're saying how he can come awake again. And it ends with a kind of prosthetic statement. It says he may again if something happens, and he could again if something happens. And it says, and will again, if so be soothed by his elders to his younger shall be said. In other words, if a prophecy is made, he could awake. Without the prophecy, you can't awake. So this is a very interesting idea that, you know, as you were talking about Santorini in a certain sense, the reading itself has to create the conditions, has to open the space. The reading doesn't make it happen. It's not because it predicts that it happens, but the reading creates a space in which something can happen, which I think is a very fascinating idea.
It's like it can open a door or at the very least kind of highlight a door that perhaps the person's not even looking at to take them towards a direction that will be, I don't know, better for them, more in line with what they're looking for?
I think something more subtle than that. I see it like creating a kind of reality in which a person might see a door. There's opening something up in the person that might not have been opened before that enables them to see the possibilities of change.
So like an initiation, an actual transformation inside of them by the process of the reading versus necessarily maybe the content of the reading? Is that what you mean?
Both are involved, yeah. Mm-hmm. But certainly the process of the reading is a big part of it, yeah, as well as the content. You know, in the article, then the person is, in a sense, challenged to meet that moment, to inhabit that space that's opened up.
Yeah, that's the point at which you can't, as a reader, take responsibility for them, right?
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, they clearly are going to refuse, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They may even say so. They may even perceive it and say, you know, I can't do that, or I won't do that, or I'm not going to go there, or something like that, you know.
One of the thoughts that sort of instigated this process for me of looking to interview people and talk to tarot readers about change are the clients that I have seen for years maybe, who nothing ever changes. Their readings always seem to be, as best I can remember, which is not necessarily that great, but even from what they say, their readings perpetually seem to be the same, and they keep coming back, but then they keep not quite integrating that change or moving in a different direction.
Yeah, I know. And that's people's, you know, choices, really. You know, I remember this one person I read for a number of times, and, you know, she would be in a disastrous relationship or even just fantasy relationship with some guy, and the reading would make it clear, and she'd see it totally clearly, you know. But then afterwards, she kind of twists the reading in her mind to somehow encourage her to do something that the reading, in fact, said she should never do. Or she just decides she's going to do it anyway, in a certain sense. So yeah, the structures are too powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a question of what the person wants or doesn't want. It's a question of sense of structures.
What do you mean by structures? Like their internal beliefs or...
internal beliefs, their background, their projections, their history. These create structures in people's lives.
Do you have any suggestions as to if people feel like their structures, their own structures are getting in the way, how they approach that?
You can be conscious of that, and then you can also ask the cards questions around that. You know, question like, what do I need to change? You know, what do I need to look at to change? What do I need to, be aware of? What's stopping me? You know, what helps me? What blocks me? Things like that. So you can make that, change itself the subject of the reading.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the circumstances around the change, but the actual ability to change.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. There's this, you mentioned earlier in the interview, where people, there's one sort of group of people who say, you should just kind of not give specific advice or not tell them what to do or not, you know, even kind of tell them about the future. And then often with that goes into a really sort of therapeutic approach to working with the cards of asking questions and stuff. And then on the other hand, you've got maybe your psychic friend who gives concrete advice or specific things and says, you know, there it is, do what you want with it. I wonder what the middle ground is. I wonder what the integration of those two is.
It's a good question. I mean, a friend of mine, I've also recently was talking to her. This is actually more of her readings, but maybe it's a psychic stuff too, but she was telling me about some client that she has. That, you know, she said, you know, I told her, you know, what she needed to do, and she doesn't do it. And she was obviously, you know, she was kind of offended that here she keeps telling this woman, you know, how not to screw her life up, and the woman keeps screwing her life up.
Mm-hmm.
And to some extent, you just have to let go of that, because if people are going to screw their lives up, they're going to do it. they're not insulting you, not insulting your reading. They're just, you know, the way I would say it in this conversation is the structures are too strong. But certainly I think that, you know, that kind of metaphor maybe can lead to some possibilities of, you know, neither giving concrete, you know, advice or being completely laissez-faire and therapy-minded, but looking at what are the structures of a person's life, what are the ways in which change is resisted and what ways in which change can happen, so they, like, tackle that head-on, you know? Except, of course, if the person doesn't want to. I mean, a lot of people, of course, go to tarot readers just for information and for the hope that the information will be good.
Yeah, they're looking for a fun time or curiosity or whatever, and they're not looking...
No, what I mean is people who want to know the future.
Oh, okay, yep.
And they're hoping the future will be something they like. And if it's not, they keep coming back. You know, if it is, they keep coming back anyway because they're hooked on the future.
And do you ever find that you run into a clash between maybe your approach in reading and the approach of the questions that people are bringing to you?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, you know, when... my friend Zoe, who works with me, you know, sets up the readings, and we always try to remember for her to tell people who've never worked with me, you don't know my books or anything, that I don't do psychic fortune telling. They have to be prepared that I'm going to be talking about, you know, the issues in their lives, not about what's going to happen, and that they should be prepared to, like, discuss it, you know, and communicate and be part of the dialogue. And even then, people will still come, you know, and they'll say, oh, okay, absolutely, no problem, you know, and then they'll come and they'll say, okay, I want to know, you know, when is my husband going to get a job soon? You know, will my daughter get married? You know, what's going to happen with this and this in my life? I mean, you know, very hardcore psychic prediction stuff. And that's a difficult place to be because they've come all this way, you know, and they, you know, they're expecting something, and I don't want to kick them out. I also don't want to, at the same time, you know, really disappoint them for the money they're paying. So, you know, I try to work around that and open up that space and open it up into something that, you know, I can help them with because I don't really like doing that kind of work. I will look at those issues. I mean, I try to look at the issues people bring to me, you know. But it's about it. But all about other people, I will say, we have to look at you. They're not here. They're not mixing the cards. So we have to look at you in this situation. From your perspective, and, you know, that kind of helps a bit.
Yeah, I find that we're trying to return the question back to them, to what's, well, that's great, and, you know, obviously there's this problem with that other person or whatever, but what's the thing that you can do? Where's your action in relationship to this? What can you do that's going to get you into a better relationship with this or, you know, that kind of stuff?
And also, if you tell them outright that, you know, part of the way you work is that you have them look at the picture and say things about it. Then that always opens up possibilities, you know. Next, of course, they just get angry at that. Because they think you're cheating. Because they have this model in their mind of, you know, the psychic fortune teller who sees all, knows all, and tells all. And if you ask them what you see in this picture, then you're cheating.
I'm always amused by the you're cheating approach to readings, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I've got these people, as I'm sure you have, who sit down and they don't want to tell you anything because that's cheating.
Yeah.
Or they don't want to, they'll sit like a rock because if they move, that's you might pick up something and that's cheating. And,
yeah.
I mean, I think none of it's cheating. It's all, or it's all cheating. I mean, reading is cheating.
It's all cheating, yeah. You know, I'm amused by those well after it's happened. I'm not amused by them when they're happening. Because I just find a very unpleasant experience with people like that.
Yeah, it can be pretty tense sometimes.
Because basically what they're accusing me of is trying to steal their money by being a fake fortune teller. And even though if you've said to them you're not a fortune teller, they don't hear that, you know?
Yeah.
They have their idea of what a tarot reader does, and if you're not doing it right, then you're, you know, being a crook. So it can be a very unpleasant situation. It doesn't happen too often. Sometimes it happens a little bit more, but not that much either. You know, people who kind of listen politely, but obviously you can tell they feel they've not gotten what they came for.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's, you know, you're talking about what they could do with their lives. They want to know what's going to happen.
So do you find that sometimes you talk to somebody about, you know, an issue, you're talking about it, and then they turn around and basically ask you the question as if you'd never talked about it at all?
Yeah, yeah, sure, yeah. Because all they want to know is the event.
Mm-hmm.
So in a certain sense, they don't care about your insights.
And you're trying to help them to find insights and care of what's going to happen. So they'll just ask you again, you know, because you didn't answer. To their mind, you didn't answer their question.
Yeah.
You know, so if someone says, you know, will I meet my soulmate and get married in the next year? And you're talking about the issues of soulmates and love and relationships and the history of relationships and so on, you haven't answered the question. Or a care of that and whether or not they're going to be their soulmate.
Do you ever try and sort out what it is you think that they're actually asking for in that way? Like, do you ever try and mark people as, oh, this is a person who's just looking for the event and kind of deal with them from that point of view?
I do, you know, sort of see what I can do to help them, you know, to do something that makes the experience of value to them. But it's more difficult since that's not my style of reading, of course, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I do my best, and, you know, I do my best to see if I can open them up to what I do better, and if not, to see what I can offer them that they'll, you know, feel was worthwhile. Because I definitely see tarot reading as about them, not about me.
Right.
You know, and I don't really, you know, feel like they should be satisfying me. Because, you know, professionally, I'm the one getting paid. They're not. They're the one paying the money. So, and on a personal basis, I feel like, you know, it should be a value to the person getting the reading.
It's interesting to hear you say that, because I definitely know some readers who feel that they have their style, they make it clear, and that's what they give, and if you expect it, something else, too bad. So so it's
interesting. There is that, you know. Well, that's why we do try to tell people, you know, a kind of ahead of time what they might expect. So, you know, like, I know James Wells, but, you know, James, I guess he still does, he used to have this prepared statement that he asks clients to sign.
Mm.
So, like, you know, the terms of the agreement, like when you, you know, download software.
This is your contract when you buy in for a reading?
Yeah, it's kind of, that's his attitude. And then if you say, well, but you didn't, you know, predict anything, and he says, well, look at what you signed, you know, I did what I said I would do and what you agreed to. And, you know, Camille Greer does something similar. She has a very specific statement that she gives people on the phone. She gets them to agree to it, not signing, but at least, you know, verbally agree to it. And then if they complain that she didn't make enough psychic predictions or she's asking them to say too much, she just reminds them that they heard what she said and they agreed to it, you know?
Hmm.
I once had someone, like, storm out of a reading, though, that I did. And I was visiting England and visiting John Kishleen Matthews in Oxford. And they set up a few readings for me, which was very nice of them. But, you know, they had not particularly made any statements about it to the people. And this one woman came, and I guess that she actually, they had had contact with her before, unfortunately. And she just had this attitude, like, you know, she wanted what she wanted. And when I asked her, you know, to look at a picture and what did she see, kind of what did it say to her or something like that, she just, like, you know, stormed out. She said, this isn't right. You know, you're cheating. You know, and I said, fine. Fine, the reading's over. You don't pin anything. It's finished. You know, go. And she did. And in fact, actually, it was so ludicrous. The reading was in a little kind of studio in the backyard, and you had to go through the house to get there. And she parked her bicycle out front. And rather than have to go back to the house and see more awful, crooked people, she climbed over the fence so she wouldn't have to just get to the street without going through the house. It was so absurd, you know, her attitude. But, you know, what can you do about it? Luckily, that's fairly rare, so.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like one of the topics that keeps kicking around here is this cheating and legitimacy. You know,
yeah.
And I wonder what you feel sort of makes what do you feel would be cheating? Is there anything that would sort of fall too far out of the process?
Oh, absolutely. You know, people who make claims to be psychic readers predicting the future and are, you know, either making stuff up totally or else, you know, doing what's called cold readings or gleaning information about you so that you can that they can sound like they're brilliant, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly an example of cheating.
Yeah.
It's a little more hard to cheat, you know, in the therapeutic reading because you're leaving, you know, by its nature, you're kind of having an open situation.
Yeah, there's less clear benchmarks, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And how about what might make things more legitimate?
I'm not sure what you mean.
What do you think makes a good reading or a good reader? I know it's a subjective term, but, well...
Well, to me, the first thing is, you know, to be concerned for the experience of the querent, not your own.
Mm-hmm.
To recognize that the reading is for them, not just for you. That it is for you, and you get stuff from it, but, you know, they're the primary focus. So that's one quality, I think. I think another quality is to really love tarot cards. So your connection to them is very alive, you know. I think that's, you know, kind of a significant thing.
I've seen different readers over the years, or I've known different readers over the years, and, you know, I find... So obviously there's differences. My background is very hermetic, and so I'm very Kabbalistic and very, you know, in that kind of, in that way. But then I've seen other readers who, as far as I can tell, have never studied the cards, but give readings through the cards somehow. What do you think about that kind of approach?
Say that again?
Well,
if you ever study the cards, they do readings anyway. That's studying the cards.
Yeah, you know, you ask them what this card is about, and, I mean, I certainly don't know everything about cards by any means, but what they say has no bearing on sort of any traditional associations that I'm familiar with,
yeah,
and yet they deliver readings using the cards.
Well, I did a tarot deck called the Shining Tribe Tarot, and recently I had a class on it, which was very nicely attended. And there was a woman there who loved the Shining Tribe card, but she never read the book. She never looked at the book. I think she got the card. She didn't get a book with them. And so every card that came up, she had a completely different meaning than I had. And I thought that was great. I thought it was really wonderful, you know? I don't own the meanings of my cards, and I don't feel any tradition owns what the cards mean.
Mm-hmm.
The cards, to me, you know, were around long before, as far as the evidence is, long before there was a Kabbalistic interpretation of them or a Hermetic interpretation.
Sure.
So I don't see that any interpretations have, you know, an absolute truth to them. So to me, if someone's capable of giving good readings without ever studying the cards, I think that's great, you know. I'm working on this kind of introductory book, which I'm really kind of having a lot of fun with, and I talk about that, and I say, you know, if you're the kind of person that can pick up a deck of cards, read nothing about it, and have great, you know, things come to you, then don't read any further, you know. Don't mess it up.
That's it. If it's already working, why try and fix it?
Yeah. And if you're the kind of person that absolutely needs to memorize all the meanings of correspondences before you do anything, then you really should do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most people are in the middle. You know, most people benefit from studying and learning things because, you know, why not? There's all these very wise people who have gone before us, you know?
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's different than, say, science. You know, it's impossible for someone to make up science without ever having studied previous science.
Right.
But, you know, you can respond in the moment to tarot pictures without having studied them.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to think you will respond more fully if you study them. But I don't think it's necessary.
So I'm curious about, this woman who had all her own ideas about the cards, did you learn anything about your own deck through that?
Well, I certainly learned possibilities, you know, but I already knew. I mean, it already was clear to me that what I saw in the deck was not at all, you know, the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there were certain cards, because people in readings have seen something so the opposite, there are certain cards, if those come up in a reading, I will always ask the person to say what they've seen in it before I say anything. And I'll tell them I'm doing that. That's another way to avoid people thinking you're cheating. You say, you know, I have a strong idea of what this means, but I want to hear first what you see in it. And then you give back to them what they say, and then you tell them what you say, what you see in it, so they can look at that energy that passes between those two places, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's great, and I always know that I can learn more things from my own cards or any set of cards. I'm always finding new things in the cards.
It's true. So how was creating your own deck?
Well, it was a great experience. I really, you know, enjoyed it very much. And I did it in a kind of very non-hermetic way, which is I did not start with the system of correspondences and intellectual symbols. I started with images always. I waited for an image to come to me one way or another, from something I saw, some place I went to, meditation, fantasy, whatever. And then I thought where it would go in the deck after I sketched the picture. So it was a very flowing, organic kind of process.
And did you find it changed you? Did it change your relationship to the tarot in general?
I think so. Certainly, there's now a deck to which I feel very deeply bonded, of course. But I think it also made me more, perhaps more sensitive to the possibilities of pictures in other decks. Mm-hmm. I don't know, because my way of doing tarot has always been about the images.
Right.
I'm not sure it changed that much, but perhaps deepened that approach.
And did you find it was a journey that brought change into your life as well? Because I've watched some blogs about people making their own decks, and some people seem really transformed by that process. It really seems to, almost like the cards they're working on are also working on their life.
There was a kind of great change for me, so it's hard to say specifically, what the card did or didn't do in that aspect. So much was going on anyway. But I definitely do think that it certainly helped me, doing that helped me get through this very difficult time in my life. To my mind, the tarot is always changing. Constantly changing. In this book I'm working on, I'm not sure what it'll be called, the current title is The Essence of Tarot, I make this comment in the introduction that the one thing I can say with absolute certainty is that the tarot is inexhaustible. There'll never be an end to it. Because everyone brings new things to it. And even those of us who've been working with it for 40 years, 50 years, whatever, to my mind, unless you're always discovering new things, then somehow you close something off. It should be open.
Yeah, to my way of looking at the tarot, it's a model of everything. And my knowledge and experience of everything and is obviously small and personal. And everybody that I read for brings in some other piece of that everything. And it's this sort of perpetually evolving dance where mostly I learn about myself and I learn about the tarot through reading now a lot. And it's the different situations and combinations that further deepen what I think about the cards and how I approach them.
Yeah, it's very good. I like that. It's the model of everything, and I only have a very small knowledge of everything. So there's all these other possibilities from other people and new experiences. That's very good.
Well, thank you very much for doing this.
Yeah, my pleasure.